From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, anti-black violence in Texas, the past and present. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. You don't have to look far into the past of Texas to see the ugly face of racial violence against African Americans. There is the 1910 Slocum Massacre, and we've covered that extensively on Texas Matters, but there are so many other examples. The 1916 Waco Horror, the 1917 Houston Race Riot, the Longview Race Riot of 1919, the Sherman Courthouse Riot of 1930, the Beaumont Race Riot of 1943, the 1998 Dragging Death of James Byrd, and others. What do they all mean when examined through the long lens of history while looking for a pattern and a cause? That's what the book Anti-Black Violence in 20th Century Texas attempts to do with a collection of essays. The editor is historian Bruce Glassrud.
I wrote my dissertation on African Americans in Texas, and the one thing that always struck me was the extent of violence. I became president of the East Texas Historical Group recently, or, 5 years or so ago, and I gave from my presidential address sort of a synopsis of an overview of anti-black violence in Texas. It's just something that hasn't been reported, and Texas, unfortunately, is one of the most, if not the most, anti-black violent groups or states in the nation. So it was kind of a culmination of a lot of my research and thinking, and anyway, I got a lot of good support about my talk, so that's kind of how it started.
When you say Texas is the state with the most anti-black violence, what do you mean by that?
Well, that in terms of lynchings, Texas was number three only of lynching blacks, but they're right there with Mississippi and Georgia. Most recently, say the last 20 years, it is the NAACP in my estimation that there has been more black race-related deaths caused in Texas than in any other state. And so it's just, it's a culmination. Texas sometimes wasn't any worse than, unfortunately, than some of the Deep South states, but it's been rudely and crudely violent against blacks in this state. It's a whole effort to retain and enforce white supremacy. We haven't got over that yet.
So I want to categorize and drill down and really explain what you mean by modern-day racial violence against African Americans. Are you talking about like modern-day lynchings? Are you talking about law enforcement? What are you talking about?
Well, mostly I was just talking about the number of African Americans who have been killed in likely race-related incidents in places over in East Texas that no one has done. The FBI or the Department of Justice, the federal and the state are looking into them, but so far no reaction. So a couple of the articles that I have in my book, Loyal Garner's, the Jasper lynching.
Jasper lynching would be the truck dragging of Mr. Byrd.
Which is probably, Joyce King called it the Jasper lynching. That's a good discussion, but it's the truck dragging, yes. Anyway, it's just there's enough incidents of blacks who are killed or viciously treated. That's not even getting, as you know, getting into the incarceration of African Americans, which is much more extensive in Texas, proportionate to white. Who are incarcerated in prison or jail.
So give me an example of one. I know you just named some, but I want you to really explain it and give me the case of an incident where you think an African-American was targeted recently and is just captures what you're talking about.
Well, sort of Pamela Colliff in her Texas Monthly article talked about the beating of Billy Ray Johnson. Maybe that's as good an explanation as any. He was not killed, but he was severely beaten. It was over in East Texas near Paris, if I remember right. And he was beaten severely, by three, a couple of guys in town. Men, the three who were found not guilty and blamed, the people in the community blamed Billy Ray for getting beaten up. Finally, the Southern Poverty Law Center took this to court and got Johnson, I don't know the amount, but an extensive settlement.
So $9 million.
Okay, thank you very much. I mean, so that's how serious others thought it, but not the white people in the community.
So let me just clear up the facts here. 2003,
sure.
Linden, Texas. Billy Ray Johnson was beaten severely at a party in which he had been driven to. He's severely mentally disabled individual, and then his body was dumped on the side of the road. Okay, let's look at this case. What makes you think that this is part of a systematic effort to oppress African Americans across Texas in order to maintain a hierarchy of white supremacy?
Well, because it's been happening for so many years. Gary Bledsoe, the president of the Texas NAACP, and a very good attorney, he said that in a talk a couple years ago, that there were something like 16 or 17 other types of incidents like this. He didn't name any of them, but the NAACP was concerned about. You could look at almost any year, all the way back through the 20th century, and spot incidents of anti-black violence. I think it was just one or two years, but when you see it through such a long period of time, it seems to me it's quite obvious. Just to flip the coin for a moment, I think the fact that black voting rights and Mexican-American voting rights are being taken away is all part of the same thing.
You mean voter ID? So that's part of an exclusionary policy of trying to keep the people you don't want to vote from getting to the polls. That's very different than lynching people.
But it's part of the same process.
And you are drawing a direct line between some of the horrors of the Jim Crow era, where people were lynched from hanging trees or burnt to a cinder, and also race riot, the Houston race riot of 1917. You say there's a direct line between what happened back then and what Sandra Bland today in Texas?
Yeah. I do think there's a very similar line there. Yes.
Well, tell me more about that.
I think that's the whole point of the book. Every decade, I found some violent anti-black episode, and it continues, as you say, even very recently, the last couple of years. That's about the best way I could describe it.
What do you make of the fact that there are no historic markers in Waco or Dallas or Houston, some of these places, Longview, where we had outbreaks of anti-black violence?
Well, two things. First, I'm not so concerned about having historic markers all over. We have many of them in Texas, and they keep being added. I don't know that they show necessarily anything. I suspect that partially it's because the majority of Texans don't really want the white majority, really don't want to be reminded of these incidents. And that's probably why they partially happen, because there are a large number maybe who don't appreciate that, but they can't speak out or are unwilling to speak out. So I'm not so concerned about the failure if we put a historical marker, like you say, Longview, for example, about that horrendous episode there.
That's the Longview race riot of 1919.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure what that tells. On the other hand, I wanted to make sure that people did remember it, which is why I put it in my book. So, yeah, it's a dual sword there, I think.
Do you think that there is a deliberate attempt to whitewash Texas history and remove this information?
No, not anymore. If you, you know, pick up one of the good Texas history textbooks, and there's five or six of them that are quite good, they'll talk about these kinds of incidents in their history textbooks now. Now, the unfortunate thing is that that knowledge and that history isn't always being recaptured in our junior high or, you know, high school level works. And again, I think that's why a book like mine can be helpful and valuable.
Tell me about the Houston TSU riot.
In 1967, the Houston police arrested a couple of blacks on campus or near it. It alarmed. Students got alarmed. Some of them kind of boarded themselves up in a dormitory. The police came to make sure that everything was going right, apparently. And a few shots were fired from the dormitory by students, or anywhere from the dormitory, whether it was students or not, I'm not quite sure, at the police. And the police responded by shooting back into the dormitory. Over the course of the evening, students fired something like 40 rounds, I believe, out. And in the thousands, police shots were fired into that dormitory. The students were ultimately in the morning moved out, and the police allegedly, because they were looking for evidence of what was going on, just went through and really destroyed the dormitory. So it wasn't a riot in the sense that we sometimes think of, but that's sort of the incident. I wouldn't have put it into the book, but it was the overwhelming response of the police that I thought showed sort of this anti-black behavior.
So you're looking at how the police were just, they were ready to unload.
I think so, yes. I think that's a good word to use in that instance, yes.
But they were under attack by, I guess, what they call were African-American militants in a dormitory.
Well, do you need to shoot, what was the number? Something like 2,000 rounds into a dormitory in order to respond? I'm not sure. It's just like some of these other incidents that have been happening around the country recently. The response sometimes seems much harsher than what's happening. But as you point out, the police were had been shot at. So it's one has to draw their own conclusions. I think it's a pretty vicious response. But, you know, there's different ways of looking at it.
But how many people today are even aware that that happened? Is that something that even many people in Houston know about?
In Houston, maybe they're vaguely familiar with it. Around the campus, I know there's been a couple of books that have talked about it, the histories of Southern Texas Southern. But no one has ever done a little history of what really happened at Texas Southern to that.
So that goes to the fact that there is this history. You have this narrative. You're looking at this arc and this thread that goes through that connects modern day incidents, violence, acts of violence against African Americans in Texas. And you're saying there is a connection between that and the Houston race riot of 1917 and all these other lynchings and events that have happened, including the Slocum Massacre. Don't people need to know that?
Well, that's why I did the book.
I know, but more on a grander scale.
I don't know how we do that. Some of the history texts will talk about it. I've talked about it for a number of years and then did this book. I think the people in the black community remember this. They talk about it. They've written about it. And,
you don't think historic markers would even be, even if it's just a symbolic gesture or at least it's some acknowledgement?
Well, you know, that's a good, I hadn't thought of that. And I've got to think about it more. I suspect you're right. And I do know some of the people on the historical commission. So we might at least ask them why there aren't some markers in places like Longview and Sherman, maybe. But I don't know if there's anything at Texas Southern or not.
Right. I wouldn't wager that there is one.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Yeah.
But by not having official historic recognition of these events, they can be, and we've seen this, eventually argued out of existence.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you've pointed out something to me I truly had not thought of. And at first, you know, when you first mentioned it, I was a little, well, I don't see it. But I think you're absolutely right. I think that could be a very important thing to do. And so maybe a bunch of us just should start suggesting it and see what happens.
In regards to, some people say, why stir this up? Why not let this be forgotten? Why? Why keep it remembered?
The African-American community remembers it. It's the white community that doesn't. And what that means is if they don't remember the past, then we keep making the same mistakes again. And we keep treating African-Americans and others. We're switching some of that now to the Mexican community, to our recent immigrants coming in. So I wouldn't call it stirring up, but if it is, that's good from my perspective anyway.
Bruce Glassford is Professor Emeritus of History at California State University, East Bay. He's the author, co-author, or editor of more than 24 books. His most recent book is Anti-Black Violence in 20th Century Texas. I checked with the Texas Historic Commission. There is no historic marker at Texas Southern University, highlighting the day in 1967 when one Houston police officer was killed, one student and two officers were wounded, and 488 students were arrested. When it comes to his writings about the history of anti-black violence in Texas, E.R. Bills leaves little to the imagination. His most recent book, Black Holocaust, The Paris Horror and a Legacy of Texas Terror, is an unflinching account of the fiery racial lynchings in the state. Bills is also the author of the book, The 1910 Slocum Massacre, and his work paved the way to reclaim that event into official Texas history. Bills will be in San Antonio giving a reading at the Twig Bookstore on Saturday, February 6th from 11 to 1 p.m.
I've been writing about, well, really, social justice and sort of been approaching activist causes for a long time, and this one just kind of, the Slocum Massacre in particular, I discovered it when I was, as I told you before, researching the Porvenir Massacre out in West Texas, and I wrote about both in my first book, and then I published a feature about the Slocum Massacre in the Austin American Statesman, and just the story grew, and I just found out more and more, and it was just something I couldn't let alone, because I think Texas in a large way is sort of in a state of denial.
Let's talk about the obvious thing. Okay, E.R. Bills, when we meet you, you look like a redneck good old boy. And I've heard people describe you as the undercover redneck, but you're writing about a history of violence against the African-American population in Texas. I mean, why are you doing this? Why you?
You know, I'm not sure I can answer that. I look like somebody belongs on an episode of Duck Dynasty. I can't really help that, but yes, I'm the white man, and these issues are just important to me. I mean, I've always sort of operated in sort of multicultural environments in college and even after, and people, minorities, you know, Hispanics, African Americans, they're sensitive to some of these things, and I think most white folk, just like me, you know, they're not so much, and they don't realize some of the obstacles and some of the repression and oppression, I guess, that persons of color deal with in this state. And generally speaking, I think that most Texans like to think they're decent, fair people, and they don't realize that what's going on in this state isn't decent or fair in a lot of cases. Things are scary right now in Texas, and I think it's largely because of the white folks. They're ignorant about some of the things that people face.
When people tell you white privilege, what do you think?
Well, I'm embarrassed at first because certainly I've enjoyed it. You know, I'm that prototypical beneficiary. You know, I'm the white guy. Everything was easier on me. More doors were open to me. Everything was easier to me all around. And you know, I'm not people have accused me of being ashamed of my whiteness. I'm not, but I'm more interested in my humanity. You know, it's something I take more pride in. And I think in terms of humanity, you have to acknowledge that white folks enjoy privilege here in Texas, and they have for the entire history of the state. These are problems that we need to address, and I don't have a problem with it. And I don't have a problem with the fact that I'm white, you know, addressing these issues, because I, you know, like I said, I've always sort of been involved in multicultural, you know, settings and efforts and schools. So it's just something I'm comfortable with, but I can say, you know, frankly, a lot of white folks in Texas aren't. You know, we still have segregation in some of our communities, economic and otherwise. And, you know, like I said, most folks here like to pretend it's not going on, but it really is.
You write in nightmarish graphic detail in the book Black Holocaust about these are not just lynchings. These are about the burning at the stake of people. We think to say lynching, people think about being hung from a tree, and that's bad enough. But it goes much further than that. I don't want to get into the hyper details of what went on, but it's just it is beyond belief. Is that important that people know how terrible it was in that level?
Oh yeah, I think it's really important. Basically, and these incidents basically trickle down to what we see today. You know, that what's going on today, it sort of has roots in this behavior, this white behavior. It was terrorism, plain and simple. White folks terrorized persons of color in this state for decades, and you know.
But that terrorism as a means of social control.
Social control, exactly. Terrorism as a means of social control, as a means of intimidation, and letting persons of color knowing that, you know, our societies would be run with white primacy, or, you know, in other words, white supremacy. I mean, it's just the way it was going to be, and if they stepped out of line, they would face harsher consequences than white folks would face for the same crimes or indiscretions or faux pas, whatever. And if it happened once, it can happen again. A lot of these things happened a long time ago, but they inform sort of our conversation today. You know, if you were an African-American living in East Texas, you had to tiptoe around, you know, white folks, you know, really way up into the 20th century. And, you know, only now are folks, persons of color in areas like that, gaining a voice. And I'd say it's still restricted to an extent, and there's still fear in the African-American community and in some cases Mexican-American communities. You know, there's still a whitewash going on, and, you know, we got to address it because, if it happened once, it could happen again. And the folks that got away with it, it was its own regimen of terror. You know, people kept the mementos, kept pieces of the hanging rope, and in fact there's a piece of hanging rope at the Dallas Public Library they have in a glass case that you can look at. They kept mementos, they published lynching postcards. There was just an atmosphere of repression. It's something that needs to be addressed and people should know about.
You participated in the dedication of the Slocum Massacre marker, happened January 16th, and that appears to be probably one of the few, if not the only, markers in Texas that commemorates the white-on-black violence that happened routinely across the state. Why aren't there more?
Well, like I said, white folks in this state, to their very core, I think they practice denial, and they practice selective amnesia. I think the Equal Justice Initiative here a while back mentioned this term, white fragility. I think that's the case. White folks in Texas and outside of Texas, across the country, they like to think they're pretty special and they've achieved a lot and they're pretty important and they've been fair and decent. And the fact of the matter is, in a lot of cases, they have not. I'm comfortable saying that as a white man. They have not, we have not. And they've never been called out on it. They've never had to face some of these facts or acknowledge some of these incidents or even really atone for them. So yeah, you have gosh, that's the biggest part of white privilege, not having to apologize, not having to even admit. That's its own form of white privilege.
Well, people are familiar, I think, with the Waco horror. There's no marker there. The Dallas lynching, that was prominent. These things happen. They're all over the state. Every county pretty much has a hanging tree that people can point to, but no marker that talks about what actually happened there.
Well, that's because most of the folks that run the county historical commissions, and really, in many cases, the county political offices and local city offices are white still, and these are just events and issues, atrocities that they don't want to address, they don't want to admit, and I think it's going to take sort of a long effort to sort of correct that. You're right, in Dallas, you know, Alan Brooks was pulled out of the second floor of that courthouse and drug downtown. They tried to burn him, but a police officer showed up and stopped that, but that was after he was lynched. I mean, and you have these incidents all over. There was a Mexican-American, actually they're not clear whether he was a Mexican-American or a Mexican, burned at the stake in Rock Springs there in Edwards County. There are incidents all over the place that haven't been addressed or acknowledged, and you know, again, most of the folks in the historical commissions are white, and in fact they're older white folks, and you know, most of the county histories, you know, some of these lynchings and some of these burnings happened in front of thousands of people, 15,000, 10,000. They were like the events of the season. And when these white folks go and write these county histories, these incidents are not included.
The millennials of color, how well informed are they when you meet them and maybe they've read your book or they're learning of your book and you're learning of your work? How is that working?
Well, they're shocked. They're shocked. Generally speaking, they're not well informed about a lot of this history. It's not in the Texas, obviously, in the textbooks here in Texas, and it seems like they're less and less every year. So they're just not real aware. But when they hear about it, you know, they're shocked, of course, at first, but then they're sort of amazed, and I think they start to, you know, as they delve into research of these issues and these incidents, they start to understand maybe the context of what their elders went through and had to deal with, and sort of gain appreciation for those struggles and those tribulations. And that's why it's so important to get the word out about these issues. It's really nice. I'm glad they enjoy, you know, arguably more freedom and suffer from maybe less discrimination, but they need to realize freedom isn't free. You know, Texas, even 10 years ago, seems like folks were more open-minded and less discriminatory. And now it's like we've regressed. So we very well could be headed back in the direction of something approaching what their elders dealt with or went through.
E.R. Bill's most recent book is Black Holocaust, The Paris Horror and a Legacy of Texas Terror. It's an unflinching account of the fiery racial lynchings in the state. He is also the author of the book, The 1910 Slocum Massacre. Bills will be giving a reading at the Twig Bookstore in San Antonio on Saturday, February 6th from 11 to 1 p.m. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, or you can write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.